Welcome to In Conversation with Lyndon Terracini, the podcast where we meet the extraordinary talents, both on stage and off, working at Opera Australia. These conversations were all originally filmed for our streaming service, OA TV. You can find more online at tv.opera.org.au, as well as full productions and behind-the-scenes footage. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to OA TV. And my very, very special guest today, Graham McFarlane. Graham has been with Opera Australia for more than 40 years, and he's got some fascinating stories to tell. So, Graham, welcome.
Thanks, Lyndon. Good to be here.
So I think you first sang with Opera Australia in the very first production in the Sydney Opera House of War and Peace.
1973, yes.
Wow. Do you want to talk a little bit about how it was in those days?
Well, I remember, I just come from the Con, because I finished the opera program there, and they asked the students to come down and sing at this building that had just been completed called the Sydney Opera House. So I came down and I did an audition, and the next thing I knew, I got a contract to say I was going to be paid to sing. It's a bit of a novel idea. So that's what happened. And then the very first engagement, professional engagement, was in 1973 in War and Peace. Which is a massive production, like it's mega. I think probably the company chose it because I think there's 70 principals, so it gave everyone a bit of a go.
Yeah, yeah.
And a massive chorus, and I remember, I think it was Ted Downs, Sam Warnemaker,
that's
I think
right.
was the director.
Yeah.
Actually, I remember this, we had this scene, I think it was fleeing refugees, and he wanted to create like a procession of endless people. And of course, as we know, the wing space is really small at the Opera Theatre. So what he did was create this circular motion where we'd walk on in our costume. And as we reached the wings, we'd quickly get out, there'd be a dresser there, we'd get another jacket on and different hat or something. And then we'd go appear as someone else. And we would have done about three or four revolves.
Yeah.
But it was mayhem, but it was really effective.
Yeah, and I'm sure it was a tremendously exciting time
in
those days. Yeah. I think, too, on the first night, a possum ran across,
the
stage.
Yeah, I remember that happening.
How did the possum get into the Sydney Opera House?
Exactly. All that security.
Exactly. But seriously, that time was a tremendous time for the company. It was really...
Absolutely.
The company had moved from the Elizabethan Theatre in Newtown.
Yeah.
And so it was a big thing and a very exciting time.
And of course, Dame Joan came back in those early days too. That they were very exciting times.
Yeah, I remember seeing Tales of Hoffman in the concert hall, where Dame Joan sang all the soprano roles. That was a terrific production. It was very exciting.
Yeah, they were very exciting days.
But then after that, you went overseas.
I went overseas. Yeah, I won the Sonaria, so I ended up going to the Royal Northern College of Music. It was Peter Hemmings who he recommended that to me. So I did that. I did a postgraduate degree there. But of course, I wanted to sing. So I managed to get an agent who got me work with Scottish Opera. And I did Alma Viva's in Barber with him. And that toured. That was a lot of fun. I ended up going to Northern Ireland, but it was still pretty dangerous to go to Northern Ireland. In fact, I nearly got killed in Northern Ireland.
Oh my God, how did that happen?
I did, well, I was walking along the street with Peter Glossop. I was doing Macbeth, singing Macduff in Macbeth. And he happened to see this bottle come hurtling out of a bus, heading straight for my head. And he just grabbed me and pulled me like this, and it just smashed right where I was standing. If it had hit me in the head, I hate to think what would have happened. So that were scary times. And I think the hotel I'd stayed in had been bombed about 15 times, you know. But it was the production was great, and it was great to work with someone like Peter Glossop.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah, he was a great
singer. He was a lovely guy too. And we'd go after the show and have a Guinness across the road. So that was a lovely experience.
I remember he came here once and filled in because everyone that was singing Rigoletto was sick. So they got Peter Glossop in, he did a couple of performances.
Yeah, he was a great singer.
He was,
He had this massive head.
It's a famous recording of him singing Rigoletto with Donald Smith. Singing The Duke from Sadler's Wells.
Is that right?
Yeah, with Elizabeth Harwood. And they do it in English, but it's a great recording. They were all at the top of their form in those days.
I think he finished at the Met.
Yeah, he was covering at the Met, and I'm not sure
Did he pass away, or is he?
I would imagine. Because he was certainly older than me, a lot older than me.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, because when we first met, you were a baritone.
Exactly.
And with a gorgeous voice, easy top and all of that.
Yeah.
But then you decided to transition and become a tenor. Did someone advise you about
that? Well, that's an interesting story too. Because I was about to start uni, doing a science degree at the University of New South Wales. And around the same time, I went on this television competition called Holden Showcase. Mm-hmm. It was compared by Gordon Boyd.
Mm.
So on that, I met someone called Hector Crawford, who was a media mogul, and launched a lot of quite famous careers in Australia. So he was the one who suggested I might be a tenor.
Mm-hmm.
He planted the seed. And while I was there, this person suddenly appeared called Ron Jackson.
I was
rehearsing there.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to offer you a scholarship to study at the con. So I don't know whether those two had got together.
Mm.
I don't know, but Ron Jackson just appeared.
He was a terrific guy, Ron.
Yeah, he was lovely.
Yeah.
So and that's where we were. I mean, we were at the con together.
Yeah.
So basically that's how it happened.
And so Ron wanted you to come to the conservatorium as a tenor.
Hector Crawford had introduced the idea.
Yeah.
And I think then Ron picked up on that.
Right.
And the first role he gave me to do was Goro, which sits in between.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I've done Goro forever.
Yeah. 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 We're still doing it.
Yeah. So. Still doing it. Yeah. So that was
Yeah.
But having said that, I did for a period I was a resident tenor in Western Australia.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And I did lots of roles there.
We did Don Giovanni together.
We did Don. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did. Look, I did most of the tenor Mozart roles there.
Yeah.
I did Edgardo in Lucia.
Yeah.
I did more Almavivas with Tom Lingwood.
Yeah.
It's his old production.
Yeah. But was that difficult to transition from baritone to tenor, or did you find it a natural progression?
I think what happened, because I learnt off a tenor.
Yeah.
I think to some extent I started copying the sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think my voice has always sat in between.
Yeah.
And I extended my range with head voice and things.
Mm.
But having said that, I've done some quite substantial tenor roles in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I've ended up in the Compromario of Art, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And you had a terrific time and career in Europe, but what made you decide to come back to Australia?
Well, I had a young baby and I thought, oh, I can't be dragging them around the world everywhere.
Yes.
It's just not fair.
Yeah.
So I came back and I thought, oh, look, I'll freelance and see how long it lasts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I freelanced with the company again as a guest artist.
Mm.
And then, as I said, I ended up in Western Australia. Mm. I did lots of things there. While I was in Western Australia, I did get quite sick. I got an arthritic condition.
Uh-huh.
I virtually could not get from my bedroom to the bathroom in the morning.
Dear.
I was in so much pain.
Mm.
So anyway, they diagnosed me with ankylosing spondylitis.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to have my joints, put cortisone in my joints and synovial fluid drained.
I thought,
that's the end of my career, you know, because it really stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
But a friend of mine mentioned the police choir.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, okay. So I ended up joining the police choir.
Oh, gee. Was that in Sydney?
Yes, with other fellow professional singers, because they couldn't augment it, because there weren't enough policemen to sing in the choir.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't get any.
Yeah.
So they augmented it with professional singers.
Uh-huh.
And it was great, because it slowly gave me a bit more confidence and time to convalesce, where I build up a bit more strength.
Did the cortisone affect your voice at all?
Not that I noticed. Yeah. It was localised.
Uh-huh.
They just put it into the joints.
Yeah, yeah.
And then drained the... Like my knees were shocking, the pads of my feet.
Mm.
Oh, and then I got iritis,
which
is how they diagnose it, because there's an association between arthritis and your eye. Your eye gets inflamed. And So it shouldn't be... It's all past history. But,
but
it was good to be able to do that period with the police choir, because it got me singing again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was over... It was gentle and was over a long period. And then I re-auditioned for the company again.
Yeah.
And then basically that's where I am now. I'm still here.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, people think that a singer's life is easy, but it's quite the contrary. And, you know, it's thank you for being so candid about talking about it.
Oh, that's fine.
But you must have seen some huge changes, not only at Opera Australia, but in the business generally in the last 40-odd years.
Yeah, look, that's true. it's funny, when you're part of it, it just happens. Mm. It just slowly evolves. Mm. I wouldn't say it hasn't been anything sudden. Like I remember we used to do our own makeup in the beginning, you know. Yeah. I hate to think what I might have looked like. so that's a lovely luxury that we get to sit there and someone does it. It's nice. Yeah. I like that. We had no language coaches back then. And a lot of the things were done in English back then. Yeah. So there's been great progress in all those areas.
Yeah. One thing I want to ask you, you've had a fantastic career and a long career. And it's fairly well documented that over the last 15 to 20 years, people have had much shorter careers, and there's a phenomenon really of the five-year career. Right. Have you got any advice about that you want to pass on about how you feel you can be still in good form after 47 years?
Well, I'd have to say technique. Mm. Developing a good technique from the beginning is so important.
Yeah.
That's why I value teachers like Joss Hecht.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're a dying breed.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame.
Yeah.
So you can go through a con, it can all be academically, you know, but do you have that solid technique?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't think there's as many teachers around that can teach it.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about teaching?
I have, and I did a little bit of teaching. Yeah. I don't really see myself as a teacher.
No, sure. But you have all this knowledge, and as you're saying, you know, there aren't many people who understand genuinely what a vocal technique is.
Yeah.
And I ask you the question deliberately because, obviously you're still singing the same roles that you were singing when you were at the conservatorium.
Yeah.
So to be able to do that, you must have an extremely solid technique.
Yeah, I think diaphragm is really important.
Yeah.
So important to support.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And as I said, I see a lot of singers that, after 5 years, it's gone. And that's a tragedy.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
It's a terribly sad situation.
Lyndon, I think singing the right repertoire too, and not doing too much too soon.
Yeah.
I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Graham, thank you for coming in today.
Pleasure.
And for talking about what's been not only a wonderful career, but an extraordinary life so far. And you're going to sing something for us today.
I am.
Do you want to tell us what it is?
I'm going to sing, it's an art song by an Australian composer, Vera Buck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically what we've been doing today is reminiscing.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful song. I guess it's mostly about romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
But it talks about how emptiness can be erased by the memory, the loving memory of someone.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And I thought about the COVID. I thought, you know, wives are losing husbands are losing wives. But it's their memory, you know, that stays, that lasts.
Yeah.
That's why I thought it might be appropriate.
That's lovely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Graham McFarlane. He'll be accompanied by Tahu Matheson, and I hope you enjoy this beautiful song.
Methinks that if at eventide I stood immersed in fervid memories of thee, within the leafy silence of a wood, thy spirit might be kind and come to me, and I perchance might catch the very mood wherein I saw thee, loved thee, wooed and won thee, and made thee mine. And we together by our fire thank you. though I knew thou'dst leave me presently, these empty years might all erased be.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation with Lyndon Terracini. We hope you've enjoyed the chat, and we'd love for you to subscribe to the podcast. That way, you'll get each new episode as they're released. We also hope to see you in the theatre in the not-too-distant future. And you can stay up to date with all we've got going on at opera.org.au.